You know, for those of us at least who were brought up Catholic, take the Pope for granted. Just think, there are over 5,000 sects, Christian sects. In fact, somebody said once 50,000, but I'm sure that's too much. And we just take it for granted that we have an infallible source of truth. Now, to be infallible, he's got to be sitting on the chair of Peter, which means, you know, ex cathedra, you know, from the place of his authority, etc., etc. But all of this teaching we've had, particularly from the last popes, starting with Pius the XII, but goes back before that. I mean, but this regular teaching. Truth is the only thing that will hold us together. And so this feast of the chair of St. Peter is commemorating his time in Antioch. Then he moved to Rome. But he was in Antioch for some while. The chair of Peter at Antioch is called. We used to be called that anyway. If we stop and think of two things, one, what it costs to be Pope. If this man takes this role seriously, he's called to sanctity. Well, it's not easy to be a saint. It's a work of God in a person. But the person has to yield to it. And it means suffering. The number of things that man has to make a decision about every day. To say nothing of the deep spiritual suffering by which he grows into union with Jesus and is made more and more sensitive to the Holy Spirit. We have these texts today. The first one from the letter of Peter. I exhort the presbyters among you, the elders among you, as a fellow presbyter and witness to the sufferings of Christ. And the one and one who has a share in the glory to be revealed. Now, what does he mean that he's a witness to the sufferings of Christ? Well, first place, I saw them. I saw him suffer. He didn't see the whole thing because he wasn't there at the cross. Secondly, I witnessed to you about the sufferings of Christ. Third, my life is a witness to the sufferings of Christ. If you look at my life, you can see the power of God working in and through a human frame that is weak and fragile. My very being is a witness to the sufferings of Christ and the glory to be revealed. And then some good advice. You know, tend the flock of God in your midst, overseeing, not by constraint, but willingly, as God would have it. I mean, you know, the Pope could wake up in the morning and say, the heck with it. I'm going to play golf today. I mean, or he could be, I am Pope. But to be neither and have this responsibility. But you see, it's a gift. The Roman Catholic Church is the oldest institution in the world. Because we're so holy and so smart? No way. Because Jesus Christ directly has preserved us. And he preserves us in two ways. First, through the Pope and the bishops who are in union with him, and the priests who serve the bishops. That is the gift of hierarchy. It's a gift. And to share that gift, you know, to bring people, and people are beginning to recognize that, you know. Not everybody. In one of the encyclicals of John Paul II, Ut Unum Sint, that they might be one, he has this beautiful line. He says, look, the primary role of Peter, the primary ministry of Peter, is to preserve unity. That's my primary job. See, I prayed for you, Peter, that your faith fail not, and that you turn and strengthen your brethren. And so he says in that encyclical. So I asked the leaders and the theologians of the other Christian communions to tell me how they think I should exercise this ministry. That's ecumenism. Well, among the people who wrote was Olivier Clément, who's a French, obviously, Orthodox theologian. Open letter to the Pope. And it starts, Dear Holy Father, you find this sensitivity, this longing to have a Holy Father. Not because he's intrinsically better, but because he's graced. These are the things we take for granted. This fellow's really smart, this German we got on the throne right now. And he's a hard worker. And he's a prayerful man. A friend of mine, Gus de Noia, was third, and now Gus himself is an archbishop. But in those days, he was just a lowly Dominican. And he was third in command at the CDF. And when the Pope was made Pope, this one, they said to him, how would you characterize Ratzinger? And he said, he was always recollected. He never left the presence of God. That's tough enough to do when you're plowing the snow. What do you think it's like when you have the responsibility and bishops coming in all day from all over the world to tell you what's going on in their diocese? What a gift. But it's a gift that's exercised in and through suffering. When finally the last step of Peter's installation, you know, there's this one, then I've prayed for you, Peter. And then, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Okay. Now, when you were young, you went where you wanted. When you get old, somebody else is going to tie your belt and take you where you don't want to go, namely to physical crucifixion. It's a great mystery, this gift of the papacy. But it's the gift that holds the church together. Now, with the means of transportation and communication, you know, I mean, just a few hundred years ago, it took weeks. The Pope wanted to publish an encyclical or whatever. It took weeks to get to Paris. And Paris wasn't always that interested in reading it anyway. Especially Paris. But this gift of Peter, and we should pray, huh? And we have been blessed. Everybody knows that. I mean, starting with Pius X, who's canonized, Pius XI, who probably will be, Pius XII, who will be, John XXIII is already blessed. You know, John Paul will be blessed in May. Saints, So we should thank the Lord and pray today for the successor to Peter.